welcome to Talking in the Rain. I'm your host, Sairau Unju, and today my guest is writer, director, documentary filmmaker Brishkai Ahmed. Brishkai's latest work, In the Room, will be having its world premiere as part of the Vancouver International Film Festival this year on Tuesday, October 7th at 8 p.m. at SFU Woodwards. You can also catch it on Friday, October 10th at 1 p.m. at the International Village. And both screenings are going to be having a Q&A, so if you listen to this episode and you have more questions, you can ask them then. And if you're in Toronto, you can catch In the Room on October 19th at 2 p.m. at the Paradise Theatre as part of the Real World Film Festival. I had a lovely time recording this with Brishkai, and I hope you have a lovely time listening to it. Hello, Brishkai. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Do you want to get started by introducing yourself really quick, and then we can get into my questions?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me here on your amazing podcast. My name is Brishkai Ahmed, and I am a filmmaker. I'm also a playwright, and I'm currently in Vancouver.
Lovely. And your latest work, In the Room, will be having its world premiere at the Vancouver International Film Festival, October 7th. And I do want to talk about that more. But before we fully dive into that, you've directed both fiction, nonfiction. You've written for stage, for screen. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got into writing and filmmaking?
Sure. I just want to quickly just clarify one tiny thing, because you are in Toronto. In the Room is also at Real World in Toronto in October. So just a heads up for Toronto folks. So you want to know how that's a big question. How did I get to this? Honestly, as a kid, I just loved reading and I loved pretending. And I was a very curious child, just really curious about people, curious about my world. I didn't really play a lot with toys, very much like, building like mud clay, mud houses and mud creatures and using like plants and branches to be people. And so I just really am just really curious about our world.
Would you say that you were encouraged to write when you were in school, like before university, elementary, middle school, high school? How did you, because you studied filmmaking at NYU.
Yes.
And I feel like to study film, it takes quite a lot of encouragement, because otherwise people might be scared to study it.
That's a good question. So I come from Afghanistan. So anything in the arts is not celebrated. I had a diplomat father who had, plans for his daughter, and that was going to be something in the political sort of sphere, or medicine. And when he saw me getting a little bit too theatrical as a child, he kind of suggested journalism. You know what I mean? In that sense. So I wasn't really able to write and share all the work that I did with my family. But I had really encouraging teachers who liked what I wrote. And because I never shared my work with my family, I actually was able to write exactly what I wanted, because I didn't need their validation. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes that happens, that you kind of like reframe yourself around the identity of your parents, if your parents love a certain story that you wrote or whatever. But because I knew from the beginning that they would never support such a career, I kind of did it secretly and just did whatever I wanted, because the teachers in Canada and stuff didn't sort of judge me that way. So in many ways, it's kind of odd that suppression gave me, in a weird way, more expression. Like, I know that's hard for people to understand, but that's how it worked out for me, because I didn't have to please my parents when it came to my art, because I never shared it with them.
That's a really interesting way to look at it, but it makes a lot of sense.
Right? Because it's not like mom and dad were telling me, oh, don't write about a character like that. Like, girls don't do that. Or that's not correct. I just wrote whatever. And then I kept the collections. And then for NYU, again, it was like I just wrote a package, like a submission with work that I hadn't ever shared with anybody. And so I never had sort of criticism, validation, feedback. It genuinely was my own crazy thoughts.
How did your parents take you going into film school?
Well, they didn't have to pay for it. Yeah, I was
Lovely.
my husband, who was my boyfriend at that time, helped me. Yeah, and I also worked at a bar in New York, and and then I only lasted there for a year anyway. It's like didn't last that long. I was like, I know what I'm doing. I'm good. We out of here. So in many ways, I think sometimes like not having feedback and not having validation keeps you a little bit more authentic to yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way to look at it because I feel like, especially with writing, a lot of the times people say that you should share your work with others, get feedback. You know, it's better the more people read it.
Yeah. And now it's different. I mean, of course I do share my work with some people and I do get feedback, but you have to like learn how to read through the feedback. And that also kind of comes with some time and some experience. And if you're very young and you do that, you can start just creating work for other people to please other people. And that can
Yeah.
be, I think, detrimental to your artistic experience.
I
Yeah.
agree. Yeah, because then you lose your voice, right? You're just
Exactly.
doing what others want to see.
Yeah, like you're shaping it, right? Like even like when we learn like when I write screenplays and yes, we go to school and they tell us about the structure and the acts and it's like why does it have to be
Why?
like that? I mean, I get
Yeah.
it, back in the days when there were commercial breaks and things like that. But I get it, some content, right, is around commercial breaks. But that's like a project that is used for capitalist reasons to commodify and sell products. So that's not the kind of artist I am anyway. So I don't care if my first act is three times longer than what it's supposed to be. It's not going to sell your cereal anyway.
No, and I think this makes a lot of sense because watching In the Room, it's not your typical documentary.
Yeah.
There is a lot of, yes, like documentary elements to it. There are the interviews, and you do leave that film having learned something that you may not have known before. But at the same time, there is so much artistic vision that has gone into it. There is a lot of different elements, and that, yeah, those things that really make you think.
Yeah.
So thought-provoking in different ways. And yeah, I think this is really interesting because when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is like, it doesn't follow the rules of a typical documentary, right? And so I think now hearing you say that, yeah.
And in all honesty, like the only place in Canada that you can do that, like you can take some creative risks with documentary, is really the National Film Board of Canada. I mean, outside of that, I've got a great producer, Terry Snellgrove, Shirley Ricrusi. I mean, these are people who love art. You know what I mean? And they push you to be different, surprise people. And the only way you can be different and surprise people is if you just are yourself. I mean, that's it. That's the only way to be unique. Any other method is just fraud.
And so, did you have an idea of what this film would look like when you started writing it, or did it take more shape like as time went on? Can you tell me about that process a little bit?
Yeah, so I knew like from the beginning that I didn't want to make a breaking news film. A documentary that is kind of like feels like a breaking news kind of story because I just feel like Afghan women have just been constantly breaking news. So I knew I didn't want to do that. And then each of the women, and you've seen the film, it's like they were part of popular culture. right? In some ways, like they broke through, you know, through popular culture in sort of a crazy, brave manner. And so I thought, okay, well, there's been so much time that has passed between then and now, between their that experience that they had to now. And if I speak to them just in a typical, like just, you know, just a standard, like, you know, we go to their home and, you know, spend some days with them, they'll speak about that experience very much from today's perspective, like a little bit more intellect. Do you know what I mean? And maybe that hope that they had back then, which we see in the film, will not be as alive. You know what I mean? So I thought about just reenacting that moment, like simply, like how can we get these women to step back in that space and time and then see what touch, you know, smell, taste, sight, you know, memory, you know, the sense of time, all those things, like the sensory experience as a whole, how would that impact our conversation? And then the women were fantastic because they were like, what do you want me to do? Some of them didn't know. Like, I explained to them that I'm going to make you take you back in time. Like, you're going to have a visceral experience probably. And I asked them, do you want more information? So some of them was like, no, I'm up for the surprise. Like, fine, take me there. With Shakufa's case, the woman who left Afghanistan during the recent arrival of the Taliban, with her, I was much more cautious because her experience was very different. And, you know, that reenactment would have been different. So with her, we discussed it step by step. And also, Terry Snellgrove offered counseling for the women in case it was needed as well. They all declined. They all wanted that moment to be as authentic as it could be without any filters. And even Shakufa, and you saw in the film, like, because it really impacted her emotionally. Like, I had to apologize to her because I was like, I know we have talked about this. But you saw in the film, she's like, no, I want people to see, you know, and I think that's also something that we have to do as artists is respect the agency of another person. You know, don't not infantilize them. Like, they are women. They are aware of what they want the world to see about them and how they want to experience something as well. And so we were fine. Well, the great thing is it made the conversations quieter. Like, it wasn't like noisy anger. You know what I mean? Like, typically, all those kind of sounds, the conversations in newsrooms you see about Afghanistan.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. I will say, like, having those interviews being set up in the setting that they were set up. And I feel like, and you can talk to this more, but you seem to have a connection with all of these people. And so adding that aspect to it, they had a very intimate feeling too. And I think quiet is a good way to describe it. And I feel like it made you focus more on the conversation. And I will say, like, the ending, when you guys held hands and you were like, we have hope, I did tear up. And
That was unexpected.
yeah.
It was, you know, like through the film, like when I started the film, I didn't really have hope. I had more curiosity. Like, that's what you did back then. You carried all us Afghan women on your shoulders. Do you know what I mean? You all did that. And then here we are now, right? But I didn't expect the learning that came out of it for me, you know, when like Sahar says Afghan women can learn something from us, that was like a revelation for me. I was like, oh my God, you are so right. And if you think about it, yes, women around the world can learn from Afghan women. Look what's happening in the United States. You're from Turkey. Look what's happening in Turkey to women's rights. So, yes, you can look at us as an example, you know? And then, you know, at the end, I thought it was going to be a hopeless film, you know? And then suddenly Shakufa just says the most profound thing that No, history has shown us tyrants do not last. And that was just like, and it, I was like, we do not need to talk anymore. This is, we have reached it.
So, like, mentioning how you didn't expect her to like talk about having hope, and same as like learning that yes, women can learn from Afghan women with like any conversation that is not scripted, there is bound to be unexpected things, right? Like, you never know what the other person is gonna say. And so, with these interviews, have your film changed at all, like pre versus post interviews? Do you think that these interviews impacted the final product?
I think, like, normally, like when we are, in editing in a film, for instance, a documentary, right? Like, you kind of like want to remove those like ums and ahs and silences and those little like quiet pauses, or even like just, silly sentences like, oh yeah, my hair, it looks good. How does it look? Kind of does it? Those are things that we usually trim out, right? But because of the way the interviews unfolded, I was like, no, keep all that. Keep those bits because this is. This isn't like I'm going to ask you something and you're a stranger. It's like we are sisters at the end of this. And that's how you talk to your sister, right? So like all those awkward moments, I'm like, we keep it. That's what it is,
Yeah, and honestly, I think it like further showed this like sisterhood that you mentioned between all of you. Yeah, so speaking of, how did you find your subjects for these interviews? Can you talk a little bit about that? Did you know you wanted to interview these people specifically, or were you like advised to interview them? How did it happen?
So each of these women were very sort of they're very pivotal in my life because, like, as you know, when I was a kid and I came to Canada at 12 years old or whatever, we have really nice social studies teachers. I love social studies teachers because they're usually very caring and kind, and they care about the new immigrants and refugee kids. Like, they're just like, but they also, pay special attention to those kids. And so I was one of those kids that social studies teachers loved because they were always concerned about Afghanistan. Oh my God, I saw in the news, and does your mom have sisters there? But like saying these kinds of things in front of a classroom where you just want to be cool and normal and not the face of oppression on TV. Oh God, I was like, I do not like this teacher, but she was so kind. You know what I mean? So these women just they like through popular culture, I saw them, and every action that they did suddenly made me feel like sort of a little bit more proud of who I was as an Afghan woman. Because at school I didn't see other Afghan women like that. In my home, we didn't exist. So they always lived in my head and in my heart, and when everything that happened in Afghanistan happened, I was kind of brokenhearted. I was very sad, and I started thinking about them. And I was like, what if I reconnect with them? What if I tell them that all this stuff that you did, it has not gone unnoticed? Like, it had impact. And trust me, there were Afghan women around the world who saw you, who suddenly started falling in love with their identity. Because you were that brave. You were the opposite of the blue burqa women that the news was constantly showing. I just wanted them to know that. That's it. Because I thought if I'm feeling this bad and I haven't even done what they have done, I can't imagine how they're feeling. Like the betrayal. And as Mojda says in the film, like it was particularly difficult for her, right? So it just started like that. And then it was like, through social media, right? Like I reach out on Twitter to one of them, Instagram to one of them. Mujda, I knew because I met her in Afghanistan. Sahar, I knew because I directed her in Afghanistan. Shakufa, I knew because I filmed her at the Women's News Network in Afghanistan. It took a little bit of time. It took conversations. The Miss Afghanistan was very difficult to get access to, rightly so, as you can see her story. That makes sense. And then, yeah, it was just then it was just agreed on that they would participate.
I love that. And I wanted to talk more about your own personal experience with moving to Canada. And as you mentioned, like not wanting to be the victim in a classroom where you're trying to be cool, right? Which is totally fair. And then to now, like being proud of being from Afghanistan and wanting to reclaim that for yourself.
Yeah.
Do you think this process has impacted the way you create, the way you make art, or like the other way around, where through creating art, maybe you gained more perspective on your own identity? Can you talk if those two interacted?
Yeah. In all honesty, this experience, actually the making of it, meeting the women, this sort of like reconnecting with them, seeing that a human being can rise and fall. Seeing that rights can be taken away and given back and taken away, just seeing the mystery and the chaos that is life, just sort of has honestly just made me a lot braver. Like, I just honestly, from now onwards, I'm only interested in just speaking my truth. And, I'm in this film. I haven't been in my other films, like, full on with my face on camera. And that was scary. But I've done that to people before. And I never did it to myself. So I finally understood what it's like to be on the other side of the camera as well. I mean, that itself has been a big lesson. Like, certainly it has made me more compassionate and understanding to anyone else that I turn the camera on. Like, I used to say that, of course, I am compassionate. I am empathetic. I'm a documentary filmmaker. I understand that. But I don't think we really understand until we are on the other side, So overall, I just feel like that the way that the world is, that everyone should just be brave and speak their truth. And it's not my goal anymore to make content to sell something. I'm no longer interested in that. And I think part of it is the beauty of In the Room that made me feel that, and the women, And then in terms of my identity, yeah, I am very proud to be an Afghan woman right now. I'm not ashamed to be a symbol of a cautionary tale. Like, careful, Handmaid's Tale, right? I'm not, because I feel like now what I learned through the women in the film is that yes, we can be of service to other women. Learn from us, right? Don't let your world reach our level where your voice is banned, where you have to wear a patch around your one eye. I mean, like, really? And don't trust your government. Be careful, right? Because men in suits, Western men in suits from the United States particularly, shook hands with religious fundamentalists and shoved Afghan women back. It was a West and East shaking hands. So you have to be very vigilant. And you might think that Afghanistan is so far away. Oh gosh, it's so far. It's like miles and miles away. Yeah, well, what's happening to Afghanistan is starting to happen 1 hour drive from where I am right now, down south.
Yeah, and like it's genuinely both scary and annoying seeing how that these things are, starting to show more in like the Western world too. And then, but people don't realize just how similar they
Yeah,
are.
exactly. Like the misogyny and like the manosphere, when you if you ever enter into that world and you see what they say, is not that different than what the Taliban say. Like, to be completely honest,
Yeah, absolutely.
the scrubbing of like the identity of women, academia, scientists, all of these things out of the US websites. I mean, that's the same. That's happened in Afghanistan, The shaming of women for what they're wearing, school dress codes, the lack of reproductive rights, and people forget that within the United States and also in some other Western countries, there are communities that live just like the way the Taliban live.
Yeah.
Like,
Like,
that's not like, go to Utah.
yeah, honestly, like some states have worse policies on like abortion than Turkey right now.
Exactly.
And
Yes.
It's crazy the way that because
Like
they've,
inter
yeah, no, go ahead.
yeah, the man is not arrested also and put in jail. But in the United States, in some states, if the doctor who gives the pill, if the partner supports them, they're also. And I think that the solidarity of like women around the world is like really essential. And I feel like we can unite. Because in all honesty, the war on women, when has it ever stopped? From the beginning.
No, literally never.
When?
No.
It's an it is the people say First World War, Second World War, Third World. Well, let me tell you, there's a pre-First World War, and that's the war on women, right? There's a pre-World War that's LGBTQ rights, right? These are the social groups that have continuously, from the time, early before First World War, we were already under attack.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't think we're ever not going to be under attack,
Yeah,
but.
because the control of our bodies is so essential for some reason.
Exactly. And so it's important to have these discussions, need to talk more, have like conversations like this more, and put out media like yours to further these conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, well that's thank you. The I think like also like I for me it's always fascinating that like whenever like I see men, if you go to Wall Street, they're all wearing their suits. In military, they're all wearing their uniform. In sports, they've all got the uniform. So men are like constantly presenting themselves as like this unified army, like everywhere they go, right? They do that, I think, to just like threaten women. But yet they want women to like not be alike, be different. So they are constantly pinning us, right? It's like the Desperate Housewives shows, like let's show women fighting with one another. Let's show them as they're against one another. And at the heart of it, that's not who women are. We can dress different, we can have different, economic classes, different whatever. We will still understand that we need to unite. And one of the things that, most people don't realize when as filmmakers, what we do behind the scenes in our little heads to sort of like facilitate sort of the making of the film to hold that heart and energy. And for us in the room, both Terry and I, my producer, Terry Snellgrove, and I talked about it. We were like, it's going to be female identifying crew as much as possible. Because when we what we decided, when we want, when people see the photos of our team, they're going to see a diverse group of female identifying individuals. Yes, there are some great men as well, allies in our team, but it's 90% female identifying, different skin colors, different ages, different experiences, different roles. And that's very important for me because just Afghan women for Afghan women, that's not going to be enough. Just American women for American women, that's not enough. Just Turkish women for Turkish women, that's not enough, right? We kind of have to have that male sort of mentality, which is really while they present themselves in costume, in their little suits and ties and military uniform, whatever, we need to unite with our voices together, right? Because that's the one thing they cannot do. Because men are innately competitive and they have inferiority complexes with each other, very much so. That's why they measure their penises and compare and contrast, right?
You're so right. And I absolutely love that you made an effort to have as many women on your crew as possible, because especially in film, it's such a male-dominated area. And so, actually, I wanted to ask
Yeah.
you, what has your experience been like working in this field as a woman, well, as a woman of color,
Yeah.
actually?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about that?
So it's fascinating because in Afghanistan, 10 years ago, I was directing and writing police legal procedurals, like dramas, blowing up cars and shit, right? Like action style. And very small female team, predominantly male, right? And I was given that opportunity. And then I come to Canada, after that phase, about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and it is bloody hard to get as an Afghan woman at that time to be taken seriously as a director and a writer. Really hard, But very easy. It was very easy to be accepted as a documentary filmmaker that does films about women. Like there is a sort of a cage, right? That you are put in some ways. Now it is changing. But that's only because in the past 3 or 4 years, there has been a movement, right? To, open the doors and include more people of color, include women, all of that, and give them the space more. But it was hard. And I think it had to do with my frame as an Afghan woman. And it has to do with the biases of people at that time that they just, when they looked at me, they just assumed that I couldn't.
Yeah.
Because, like, oh, you must have been the woman under the blue burqa. How could you, put together an action scene and blow up a car? It's like, it's just that Afghan frame just puts you in this box. And it's really hard to make someone see you outside of that. And like I realized for me, it's why I wear all black. It's why I wear cowboy boots. It's why I have these like ringed jewelries all over my hand, why I present a tough exterior, right? Because if I come in a pink shirt and a skirt, you're just never gonna see me as someone who could do the job of what a man does, apparently, because I'm an Afghan woman. So it's like late, like through the process of this film, I've come to these realizations, which is like, Brishke, why do you always wear black? Why do you always wear leather? Why do you always wear cowboy boots? Why do you always, and it's like, oh my God. It's a way for me to resist and to present myself contrary to any image that you see of the Afghan woman. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because, like, you're talking about embracing your culture and your identity as an Afghan woman, right? And so feeling the need to do all of this, absolutely, it is sad. And it's really disappointing that you kind of have to,
Yeah.
because otherwise, as you mentioned, you won't be taken seriously.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it is changing now. Like I am. I have bought gray shirts now and black and white striped shirts. And I'm starting to venture out that way. Navy, military green I've always worn, just trying to make myself look stronger, I guess. But honestly, this shift in like color is a result of the making of this film.
It sounds like this film was very transformative for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it really got me thinking about those things.
Do you think this film being so transformative for you, like making it, do you think that it could serve the same purpose for people watching it as well?
I think so. I think so. Yeah, I've had like good friends of mine who saw the screener and they've known me for like a long time, right? And they've said surprising things where they're like, I've never seen an Afghan woman like that, Or some have said a little bit more. I was just like, maybe you should reword that. But like, oh, these women are so articulate.
Yeah, okay. Maybe, yeah,
Okay.
reword
Yeah. Because you wouldn't expect them to be articulate? Why? I mean, it's okay. It's cute. It's adorable. It's fine. But that just shows me how much we need to sort of like understand the nuances of our identities. For instance, you're from Turkey. There's a variety, there's a lot of women with different ways of living and choices and things like that. And there's, we are all
Yeah.
nuanced.
Let me ask you something. When you meet people and tell them that you're from Afghanistan, do you ever get, oh, you speak English so well? How
Yeah.
does
Yeah. Less
that
and
make you
less,
feel?
less and less here. A little bit more
Yeah.
in like places in some Alberta, like in Alberta. That it's like and it's odd. It's an odd moment because you have to be polite, and at the same time you're like, why do I have to be polite, right?
Yeah. I
Like
agree. I feel the same way.
It's an odd moment, you know?
Yeah, because I ask because like you mentioning like the comment, oh, they're so articulate, and the idea that they wouldn't be like or they couldn't be made me think of this because like I personally, sure, I was raised and like I grew up in Turkey, but I have been speaking English since I was 9 years old. I've been living in Canada for eight. I went to UBC. I studied in English. And still I get, oh, you speak English so well, as if like it's so surprising that someone from that side of the world could speak English, right?
Yes. And then your response should be, you don't think so
I usually say, well, I would hope so. I've been speaking it my whole life.
well.
And then they just kind of stop after that.
But maybe we should just like stop in that moment and just like have it like just stay there and look at them in the eye, just like give back the awkwardness, you know?
Actually, yeah. I
Sorry.
kind of want to try that now. Just be like, let's sit with that for a second.
I get it more from men though. I don't think I've got from women. I've got like when I was younger, you know, a lot of like, oh, from women. But again, that's like, you know, they're, oh, you poor thing kind of, you know, which I didn't like. But I do get it from men. Yes, older men.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely. This reaction of awe, like this pity of finding out where you're from. Yep. Can you tell me about that? Like,
Now it's very different. But back then, you know, actually, to be completely honest, my back then is also the present day experience of many kids, you know, from Syria, Iraq, you know, Congo, right? Like Ukraine, right? I mean, lots of war-torn countries who come here, and I'm sure at 12 and 13, who you are at 12 and 13 hasn't changed. We all just want to fit in at school. We just want to be like everybody else. We don't want awe. We don't want those questions about, is your family okay back there in the middle of a classroom? No. Like, we're trying to either look cute for someone or like, you know what I mean? So I think that experience still is there for people. For me at that time, I know what the present day kids feel. It's just shame. It's a feeling of shame. It's a feeling also that it's not good because it makes you hate a part of yourself, right? And that is painful. And then, you know, you can either become like me, which is be a rebel and do a lot of dangerous things, present yourself in lots of dangerous ways, put yourself in lots of dangerous situations just to prove to the world that you are not that. You are so cool, right? Or it can harm a person's sort of, you know, mental health in other ways. Who knows? But I can guarantee you that it comes with a feeling of shame and a feeling of othered.
yeah, the pity making you hate a part of yourself, that's a point I never thought of, but very true.
Yeah, and I know it's good intentions, you know. And also back then we didn't have like, I mean, I don't think teachers were trained in those kinds of things. I hope present day teachers and counselors are trained to, you know, walk around these kind of things with care and consideration. Because it seems like a nice intention. But, you know, my husband is from Iran and my daughters are half Afghan and half Iranian. And when they were 12, 13, or 14, they didn't like explaining to teachers that they were Afghan and Iranian. You know, even they had picked up on it.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, I know the heart is there, it's with care and, you know, it's a sweetness behind the motivation. I feel that. But I think I'm sure there is some like training and things like that around this nowadays.
Yeah, and even if there isn't, maybe someone who works in that area is listening to this and they can do something about it.
I mean, my girls are older too right now. But when they were experiencing it, you know, they were in going to elementary school in Burnaby, and you know, September 11th, they were showing like footages, and so you can imagine, like being half Afghan, right? And like sort of what the blame that's put on that. So. Yeah, you know what I mean? But now they don't do that, for instance, right? So that's good.
Yeah, that must have been an awful experience for them.
Yeah, I think they stopped sort of doing that, just, you know, pre-COVID time and stuff, the changes were coming where they were like, okay, we cannot show images of war and things like that at school things. You know, there's certain days we cannot have an event for because it's not good for kids.
That's good.
But in the 90s, nobody cared, so whatever.
No.
You're younger, but in the 90s, nobody cared.
Times are changing for the better. Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you if there's anything specific that you want to talk about before we go.
I think we've talked about everything pretty much. I think we've had a really
Yeah.
nice conversation. I've enjoyed this
Absolutely.
conversation.
Oh, thank you. I did too. Do you want to tell everyone where, when they can watch In the Room?
Yeah. Well, you can definitely catch In the Room if you're in Vancouver on October the 7th and October the 10th at the Vancouver International Film Festival. I'm in great company with amazing films. So I'm really, really happy. And Vancouver Film Festival is awesome. And then you can also catch it at Real World in Toronto in October. I don't have the exact date for Real World, but it's in the second or last week of October. Real World is a fantastic festival. And it's a festival that supports people of color and those stories. And Real World is, I'm a huge fan of them. So I'm so excited to come to Toronto and share it with community there.
Oh my God, you're gonna be here. That's
Yeah,
so
so I'll see you.
exciting.
I'll see you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You have a good day and shine bright.